Hello and welcome to The Laydown. My name is Ryan and wow, I am so excited to share this interview with you. My co-host Joe joined me in interviewing author Juno Dawson about her adult debut novel, Her Majesty's Royal Coven. This book is taking our booksellers by storm. It is phenomenal and queer and compelling and truthfully a book that you can't put down. There are some minor spoilers in this interview as we reference character developments that are revealed about halfway through the book. I can tell you from experience that knowing the character development ahead of reading the book does not diminish the reading at all and might actually enhance it, but if you would like to go into reading the book completely fresh, save this interview for after you've read Her Majesty's Royal Coven. Order it from us, binge read it, and then come back. We'll be here. Juno Dawson is a best-selling novelist, screenwriter, and journalist. Her books include the global bestsellers This Book Is Gay and Clean. She also writes for television and has multiple shows in development in both the UK and US. Juno Dawson was so, so lovely, and I can't wait for you to hear this interview. So I'll wrap up this intro and let you get into it. Enjoy! Hi, Juno Dawson. How are you?
I am very, very well. Thank you for having me along. Thanks.
We are so delighted to have you. This book has been making the rounds of the bookstore. The arcs are so well loved.
Lots of tabs.
Yeah.
Look at that. Amazing. Thank you so much. I love to see a book with tabs. That fills my heart with joy. Thank you.
Oh, we are loving it. So let's jump in and tell us, because our listeners obviously have not had the privilege of reading this phenomenal book, tell us a little bit about Her Majesty's Royal Coven.
Gladly. So Her Majesty's Royal Coven is about five witches. They have been friends since childhood. Now, 25 years later, the women are fully grown, and their lives have gone in very different directions. One of them is now the High Priestess of the Coven. One of them is kind of living stealth as a housewife. One of them is grieving her fiancé and is kind of isolated in the country. And one of them has completely gone her own way and has started her own coven in London. But a very doomy prophecy gets the gang back together. However, the women have very different ideas on how to tackle this catastrophic omen.
They sure do.
Yeah.
I love this book. It's one of those books where, and I think Joe will attest to this, I opened it up and then did not stop reading until
It's so
cannot put it down.
Compelling. And that's like even knowing twists that were coming, it's still so good. Yeah. Absolutely loved it.
And I mean, that was, I had the best time writing it as well.
Oh, yeah, you know,
I think I'm going to name drop. The author Patrick Ness once said, you know, you can really read joy on the page. And I think that's true of this book, which is,
absolutely.
You know, I was really struggling. I wrote it in lockdown and this book got me through lockdown. You know, mm-hmm. I started it in April 2020. And by the time I finished it in September 2020, you know, we were allowed outside again. So, you know, this book saved my life. It got me through a really, really difficult time.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I loved the moments in the book where there are like world events from like 2019 and 2020 and things like that, that are explained. It's like, oh yeah, that was the witches. Or like, oh, the oracles foresaw this plague. And I just was like, oh, I love when that happens.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that for me is my favorite kind of fantasy, which is the fantasy that's very close to our reality. Because to me, and I know it's a very personal choice, that makes it feel realer. Mm-hmm. Like if these witches they exist in your town, you know, kind of as in book two and book three, we see there is a very active American coven, you know, and so I think it's delicious. It makes me feel like it could almost be real. You know, I so dearly wish this world was real. I like to think maybe there is a secret coven of witches just around the corner, and they're just so well hidden we don't even know.
I would love that. And kind of bouncing off that and incorporating the real world into your book, this book tackles really, really important and urgent life issues. I mean, we're talking about gender and power and transphobia. And I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about how and why you incorporated those things into your book, and also like centering them in a fantasy novel and kind of what that was like for you.
Yeah, I mean, I am a transgender woman living in the UK. That's almost the end of that question, isn't it?
Which is.
We have a really deep-rooted issue with transphobia in the British press, which just means that living here is deeply uncomfortable right now.
Yeah.
In a way that's quite unique as well. You know, obviously you have horrific transphobia in America and in Australia and in Europe. However, you at least you know where it's coming from. It's coming from the conservative right, and you would avoid those people anyway. So it's really easy to avoid. Whereas in the UK, you know, there's this very strange, legitimate kind of, oh, it's trans people versus feminists. And I'm like, what? I'm a feminist, all my friends are feminists, you know, and you know, they're not transphobic. So I couldn't block out all that chatter and all that noise. You know, it blew my mind that even during a global pandemic, the British press still found plenty of space to sort of scaremonger around trans people. Mm-hmm. Now, I did have a tiny seedling of an idea for this novel way, way back in like 2017, 2018, where it was just kind of like Desperate Housewives, but witches, you know, and I sort of wrote down a couple of notes, and it sat on my computer for years without really, I didn't touch it or really think about it much. But then I started to think, what if, and I think all the best novels start with a what if. I was like, what if an incredibly powerful young trans witch presented to this coven? What would the coven do with her? You know, where would they put her? And all of a sudden the life took on, the novel took on new life in that it became a cipher for me to explore intersectional feminism or the exclusion of trans women from feminism, but in a way that I find really interesting. Like, don't get me wrong, there are some amazing academic texts about trans feminism. You know, I would say to your listeners, by all means, please, please, please read Sean Fay's book, The Transgender Issue, which I think comes out in America this September. It's a wonderful book that says everything that needs to be said. But I couldn't write that book because I cannot keep a straight face. I can't write. I'm just not a serious person. I just can't do it. And also, I would get so angry. I can't be as impartial as Sean is in that book, in that she's very cool and calm, whereas I'm not. And so, you know, at the start of the pandemic, my husband said to me, you know, if you could write anything in the world, what would you write? And I was like, the Spice Girls but Witches. Yes. And he was like, right, well, then you have to do the Spice Girls but Witches. But it gave me this opportunity to explore a very real, very complicated issue in a way that I wanted to hang out with these characters. So it just became an absolute joy. And I would say to your listeners, you know, first and foremost, Her Majesty's Royal Coven is a fantasy trilogy about witches. Mm. However, it also has a lot to say about women and feminism and transphobia as well.
Yeah, I think that was something that made it so compelling and unique, because it deals so well with these really complex issues. But like you were saying, it is so full of joy. Mm-hmm. Still, it is so fun to read while still being rooted in that.
Yeah. And I mean, the characters, I feel like I know them so well. And there are so many of them that I just love so deeply.
I believe in this. I think this weirdly comes from my background as a horror fan and a horror writer. My first YA novels were horror. And I really, really believe if you don't care about the characters, you failed, because when the stakes are life and death, and the stakes in Her Majesty's Royal Coven are life and death, you have to care whether these characters live or die. And the only way that you're going to do that is to see these characters at their highest moments and their lowest moments and everything in between. And so, you know, there was a lot to cover, but I like to think that each of the four main characters, whether you love them or hate them, you know, they are multifaceted and nuanced, and you know that there are even Helena, who is a very problematic character, I still found things to love about her. Mm-hmm. You know, and when I think about Helena, my strongest emotion is disappointment, because you know Helena should be an icon. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a powerful woman in a patriarchy, and then she disappoints you.
Yeah. I found myself very disappointed in Helena. And then like Neve, I just love her. I just love her. I just want to kiss her cheeks and be like, thank you for being such a good person.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you for being so nice to Theo.
Well, with Neve, it's about her purpose. And Neve, I guess, is the main character in that she gets slightly more to do than the other three protagonists. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she is lost at the beginning of the novel. She has shut herself away. She's grieving her fiancé who's died. And, you know, she goes to work. She lives her life. But there isn't a reason for her. And, you know, it's almost like, and it's quite deliberate. She barely uses her powers for the first half of the book. She has almost ceased being a witch. But when Theo arrives in her life, our young trans witch, you know, it gives Neve a reason. And I think that's something, especially coming out of the pandemic, that's something a lot of people are thinking about. What is my reason now? Because I think the pandemic has forced us all to examine, why was I getting up and going to work every day? And is that something I still want to do? No, the world has changed. Is that something I still want to do?
Yeah, no, totally. And I want to talk a little bit about the way power works in this novel, because I think it's a very cool exploration of gender identity, right? Because for the listeners who haven't read it yet, the female witches are more powerful than warlocks, but we have this transgender witch coming in and how her power is very different. And I want to just hear you kind of explore that a little bit. And I know Joe had some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah. I mean, there is some, let's be very clear. There is some transgender wish fulfillment in this novel, because if I'm not going to write it, then who is? You know, I would say, if you are a writer listening to this, and if you are a cis writer, by all means include trans characters. I don't think the responsibility to include trans people is with trans people. I actually think the choice to include people often comes from the gatekeepers who are cis largely. So by all means write respectful and well-researched trans characters. But as a trans writer, of course, you know, I'm, you know, granting myself some wishes through the character of Theo. And you know, there are things that I want to say, because very often trans people are talked about, but we're not talked to. I knew I was a girl when I was 3 or 4 years old, you know, just kind of radiated from me. You know, I told anybody who would listen that I was a girl, my mum, my dad, my grandma, you know, anyone that I wanted to be a girl. And I think Theo is the same, but Theo has the added complexity of also discovering that she's a witch. You know, so this is, you know, she hasn't been mentored. She hasn't been schooled by the coven. So she's got this double whammy around her identity. But I also think there is something really magical about figuring your identity out. And, you know, sometimes people refer to it as gender euphoria. Mm. And I think it is, you know, in 2012, when I realized I was trans, it felt powerful. It did feel magical. It did feel transformative. And, you know, people often ask me, you know, do I identify as a witch? Do I feel witchy? And yes, because as a queer woman, there is something very inherently magical about that, in that, you know, I underwent an enormous transformation, not just physically, not just in the obvious ways, but in sort of a very powerful journey of self-actualization, which I think any LGBTQ person is going to recognize, which is why I think queer people are really into witches. There, I said it.
I love it. I wanted to ask, because we did briefly in this book get to meet non-binary magic user Kane. Are you going to explore more how the gender element of the magic works with non-binary people in the future books?
Now, sadly, Kane does not appear in book two. However, they will be back in book three. So I will say, if book one is about division between women, book two looks at the division between men and women. And then book three looks at sort of women under the patriarchy. And that's kind of the very, very loose kind of description of the whole trilogy. So book two goes in a slightly different direction. Obviously, big cliffhanger at the end, no spoilers. Book two is darker, but that's true of any trilogy. Hello, the book two in any trilogy is always the darkest one. Yeah. And so it goes in a different direction. But yeah, the second book looks at misogyny. And I think there's some interesting stuff with Theo in book two, because it's very difficult to talk about Theo without going into spoilers. So gender throughout is going to be a theme.
Absolutely.
But personally, and I will say on the record, I think, you know, we saw with, there are three trans witches in book one, in that you have Theo, who is, Theo is an outlier, and we need to explore Theo almost as a different issue, because Theo is so powerful.
Yeah.
But there's Valentina,
a
Brazilian witch who exhibits powers higher than you would expect of a male witch, which leads Leonie and Neve to think that a trans woman is a woman. Funny how I wrote that, being a trans woman. And I think the same is true of Kane as well, in that we see that Kane exhibits quite extraordinary powers. They're not able to fly, but then not all witches are. Holly isn't able to fly either, and Holly is a cis female. So, so I think, sorry, that sentence
died. That's great.
And then the sentence died. Great chat, Juno. Well done.
You're doing
great. No, that was great. I also was curious about the kinds of research that you did for this book. You know, we're looking at actual real historical witches and the line descends from Anne Boleyn, which is very cool. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the research that you did for this.
Well, I think anchoring fantasy to reality is forever exciting, and it just makes it feel real, and it feels like you're letting people in on the secret. Like, I ideally wish that Anne Boleyn was one of my witches. However, do I just think she was a much maligned woman who was discredited and smeared by Henry VIII? Yes. So, you know, there was all kinds of garbage was spoken of Anne Boleyn. They said she was incestuous. They said she was a witch. They erased her, you know, with a very modern understanding of what we now consider erasure. You know, there are very, very few portraits of Anne Boleyn. We don't really know what Anne Boleyn looked like. We think the portraits of Anne Boleyn are based on sketches possibly of someone else. And that's because the king had her portraits burned, you know, so she was cancelled. You know, cancel culture is real, but only for women. And, you know, so that was really interesting to imagine. Yeah, but what if she was a witch? And that became really fun. And as well, by using those little bits of real history, like the Bletchley Park oracles, you know, which is just such a lovely, just such a ridiculous idea that, you know, there were oracles working in World War II. You know, it's things like that, you know, Queen Victoria using her oracles in a spiritualist kind of sense. That it just, again, it makes it feel real. And it also gives a real level of depth to the world. And of course, it opens plenty of doors for potential spin-offs. I mean, I'm not stupid. I mean, if there is an appetite for it, you know, we could go in any direction, couldn't we? So,
I could read an entire book about Anne Boleyn as a witch. Like, I love that little section was...
there'd be so much research. That's a level of research I don't know if I'm ready for. But no, I mean, because I mean, that's, to me, intriguing, you know, the fact, and as well, from a societal and from an intersectional point of view, you know, what I was trying to say with that, which is for Neve and for Helena, witchcraft started with Anne Boleyn. You know, for Leonie and for Diaspora, magic started millennia ago on the banks of the River Nile, you know, and that kind of fundamental disconnect between feminism and white feminism. Let's just say it.
Oh my God, I loved Leonie and the scene where they're like, the witches are going back to their roots and like having that vision. And I was like, this is amazing. This is so great.
That was really hard dealing with ancient history, like ancient, like prehistory, pre the written word. It's really, really hard. And I will say there's more of that in book two, because it fascinates me. It fascinates me the way that we, you know, the written word only came around, I think it was like 600 BC that people started writing things down. You know, what before that? And the problem is those things that are written down, we take as true. You know, we don't really question enough of what is written down, because of course, who is doing the writing? What kind of person was able to write?
Right.
You know, and so I think, and this is something, you know, that we're having a reckoning with on both sides of the Atlantic, which is, how much should we challenge our history? And I think we owe it to ourselves to constantly challenge history and explore what we've been told and what's actually the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Bumping it up to a more like light, fun thing. So you mentioned this earlier, but I just want to jump back into it because my favorite blurb about this book is Spice Girls, but witches.
It's so good.
So elaborate on that theme, because I love it. It's perfect.
People think I'm joking. I'm really not. I'm like, no. Really, because right, you are only going to understand fandom if you have belonged to a fandom.
Yes,
basically. Absolutely. And you know, I was not a One Direction fan, but I completely understood the fandom because I had been a Spice Girl fan. You know, to have been in that bubble, I was 14 years old in 96. I'd never seen anything like them. They were five working class women. Even the one that was posh was working class, let's be honest. Yeah. You know, so, and they became the most powerful, famous women in the world. And they were very ordinary girls. You know, these weren't drama school, like they weren't hothoused K-pop stars. They could have been me. They were my babysitter. You know, they felt like the girls who would babysit me when I was a kid, and I loved them. And you know, they only really reigned supreme for 2 years before Jerry quit. Mm. And it was just such an eye opener, you know, to love something that much. And you know, at the time, I didn't know what a trans person was, but I knew I wanted whatever that was. I knew I wanted to be that kind of woman. Outspoken, brash, in no way focused on men. Like the Spice Girls didn't really seem to care that much about men, and I really, really loved it, and it carried me forward, and it, you know, it really did make me who I am today. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I probably wouldn't have said that because it would have felt faintly ridiculous. But now I'm in the position where a lot of the editors who I work with, who are women, who are around my age, guess what bubble they were in? The Spice Girls. So actually, I think we've reached a point where decision makers in publishing and film and television grew upon the Spice Girls as well. So it's kind of like, we don't have to pretend they weren't culturally significant anymore, because they were culturally significant. And they were for me, and they were for the characters in the book. So the characters were Spice Girl fans as well. And yes, they also themselves are a girl group. Mm. And you know, any girl has her girl group, whether it's in a WhatsApp group chat or whether it's in your workplace or family or your social circles. We all know what it's like to be in that gang where sometimes you want to kill them because they're totally doing your head in, but you know, they are your sisters and you would die for them. And I think that's something the readers of this novel are going to understand, that these girls, they have a lot of shared history. They have a friendship that's deeper than friendship, but something is about to tear them apart. And sometimes that happens in real life as well.
Yeah, there are some really great moments of, you know, the characters talking to one another and being like, okay, I'm talking to you as your friend. Like, I'm not talking to like you, Helena, the high priestess. I'm talking to you as your childhood friend. Like, learn to take criticism. Like, yeah, stop I'm not doing attacking you. Why are you like this? Just stop doing. Yeah. yeah. No. The female friendship lens of this book is just so spot on. It's just. I was reading it and I was like, mm-hmm, yeah, no, this is
I mean, there is a Helena in every group. I mean, sometimes I'm the Helena. In many ways, I am the Helena, which is I'm definitely the organizer. Mm-hmm. But other times I'm the Elle, other times I'm the Neve. And I think that's truly why people love the Spice Girls as well. Because at any given time, you know, we all contain multitudes. Yeah. And, you know, some days I'm a posh Spice and sometimes I'm a scary Spice. And aren't we all kind of so.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. We were chatting right before we started recording about when the Spice Girls showed up at the Olympics that year. And like, I just wept.
What a mood.
Fully wept.
Yeah. Honestly, that was a moment. I cried. I was in a pub in Notting Hill in London and I cried. I wept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely incredible. This is amazing. I know we're going to start wrapping up because I know you've got a busy schedule, but before we do, are there any books that you've read recently that you want to recommend?
Ooh, so I just read, so I'm doing a lot of virtual events with an amazing author called Lana Harper.
Love her!
So just so pure, her new book From Bad to Cursed has just come out, I think last week as well. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Samantha Shannon, who is another British fantasy author who wrote a wonderful book called The Priory of the Orange Tree, which is
yes.
I love Kieran Millward Hargrave, who is another British author who writes kind of very poetic, sort of dreamlike, Angela Carter-like prose. Mm. Lots of little recommendations there. And actually, you know what, I'm massively rediscovering Stephen King, which I haven't really read since I was a teenager. But you know, I've just read Cujo for the first time. I've just read Pet Sematary for the first time. And you know what? He's a storyteller. That man. Yeah. He just tells a story. It's perfect. I aspire to that level. That's what I would love. Just that level of kind of just telling such a solid story with great relatable characters. Mm.
Incredible. We share very similar tastes.
Yes. I think The Mercies by Kieran Millwood Hargrave was my first staff pick here.
Beautiful, like, beautiful, a little bit slept on as well, if I'm honest. I think that book deserved to be read more widely.
Absolutely.
Well, you heard it here first, listeners. Well, not first, but you heard it here. Read it. Incredible. Well, Her Majesty's Royal Coven is coming out so soon, and we are so excited.
31st
it's happening.
Oh,
congratulations.
Thank you so much. We can't wait to hand sell this to everyone who walks in the store. Here,
yes!
You
just start throwing
you,
it.
Thank you, patrons of Gibson.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day and good luck with your launch.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Huge thanks again to Juno Dawson for joining us on the podcast. What an absolute delight. Her Majesty's Royal Coven will be out on May 31st and is available for pre-order now. Trust me, you want this book. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!